Weary travelers were on the verge of exhaustion by the time they finished the long, dry miles and finally came to the burnt river.
Y'all rest and water up. Hawk, you ready to head up to Powder? See what you can learn about Bum and Red Hand?
Sure.
Be careful, friend. That's a mean, nasty bunch up yonder.
And also very sure of themselves. Red Hand is an arrogant fool, and Bum Kelly is worse. I'll be back in 2 days. Hyah!
What now, Dupree?
We got trouble. One of the movers is about to go mad, I'm thinking.
Preacher was not surprised, and he had a pretty good idea who it was. It was a soft-spoken and timid little man from New Hampshire. His wife was timid, their kids were timid. Never heard a peep out of any of them. Preacher had been watching the man as the deep wilderness closed around him. Day by day, talked more to himself in a mumbling sort of way. He wandered the camp after dark, twisting his hands and rubbing his arms nervously.
Winston?
That's him. Swift is over there talking to him now. There's a big empty gut to him, I reckon.
Well, let's go have a look.
The man's eyes were wild looking. His hands were shaking, and his face was pale as a fresh-washed and sunshine-dried sheet. He also had a pistol shoved down in his belt.
Winston! Winston! Where is your family, man? Talk to me!
What about his family, Dupree?
There's missing. All of them.
No one's seen him since this morning. Winston was late getting started. The stock drover said he didn't catch up with him until we'd been on the trail more than an hour.
Watch that pistol of his.
Preacher walked around to the rear of the wagon and looked inside. It was the awfulest mess he'd ever seen. Looked like a pack of Injuns had gone berserk. He picked up a shirt that caught his eye. It was covered with blood.
God damn.
Carrying the shirt, Preacher walked around to the front of the wagon and opened the lid to the jockey box. A small hatchet rested on top of the various tools. The axe head was bloody, with several strands of hair stuck to the edge. Preacher held the axe to the light. The hair was of different colors.
Take his pistol now, Dupree.
Dupree grabbed the pistol with no resistance from Winston.
What'd you find, Preacher?
This axe.
Good God.
The voices told me to do it. They were talking to me for days and days now. I had to do it. I had to.
All right. Where'd you do them in, Winston?
Back at last night's camp. After the train pulled out this morning.
Look at me, Winston.
Winston went down like a ton of bricks.
Jim, saddle us some horses, rig up 3 pack horses. We'll bring the bodies back when or if we find them. It'll be long dark before we get there, but it's got to be done. Dupree, you ride with me. Swift, chain Winston to a wagon wheel. We'll be back sometime tomorrow.
They were back at the wagon train by noon of the following day, with one canvas-wrapped body slung over each pack horse. The vultures and varmints had put some work in before the corpses could be retrieved, but there was enough of the partly eaten bodies for identification. They hung the canvas-wrapped bodies from tree limbs to keep the varmints from them, and headed over to the wagon where Winston was tied. He had soiled himself and was a pitiful sight chained to a wagon wheel. Looked like he'd gone completely around the bend throughout the night. On Swift's orders, Avery's father had fashioned a noose which hung from a withered tree 20 feet away.
Swift, you can't hang no madman. He ain't responsible for what he done.
We do what you tell us to do when it involves the trail, but I set the law of the train.
Preacher couldn't argue the words. That was the rule of any wagon train. He walked away and joined his friends, sitting on the ground away from the still circled wagons. Beartooth handed him a cup of coffee.
The bastard dispatched each one with a blow to the head.
I reckon them poor little girls only had a few moments of fright. But we'll never know.
Did he abuse them?
It was hard to tell. They'd all been eaten on. I'd rather think he didn't.
Them pilgrims has been working themselves up into a frenzy.
It ain't up to us to interfere. If it was up to me, I'd turn them loose. Injuns won't bother him. He'd survive for a time. But on the other hand, He might get his hands on another axe or a club or a rock and doing somebody else who's coming up behind us. Personal, I'm just glad the decision ain't up to me.
There ain't nobody been doing much sleeping except the kids. They've been palavering all night. All broke up into little groups.
They're gathering together. Looks like they're fixing to take them a vote.
The mountain men drank their coffee and waited by the fire. Their opinions were not asked. Finally, Swift walked over to where the mountain men sat.
We voted. We decided to take him with us and turn him over to the proper authorities.
Oh, come on, man. What authorities? There ain't no law out here. We ain't got no insane asylums. There ain't no jails. I don't know what the billy hell you people got in your minds that you're gonna find when we reach Fort Vancouver, but it ain't no town like y'all think of it. Either hang the poor wretch or turn him loose. Injuns won't bother a crazy person. They stay shut of them. Hell, they might even adopt them and look after them. You can't tell with Injuns. You want to take them with you? Fine. But he's your responsibility. Now and forever. The chief factor at the post ain't going to take him off your hands. You know that, don't you? He ain't got no way of taking care of that poor bastard. He don't want to take care of him, and he ain't going to take care of him. Winston is your responsibility.
You're goddamn right he is.
Swift stalked off.
Fine then! Have fun guarding him and hand-feeding him and bathing him and wiping him after he shits, because you folks sure got it to do.
Since most of the movers thought it inhuman to chain a maddened person like an animal, even though that was exactly what was happening in the young nation's asylums and would continue that way well into the next century, Swift was persuaded to merely bind the man securely with ropes. Preacher wasn't no fortune teller, but he could see this one coming from 100 miles away.
Gotta get away. Gotta get away. Where do I go? Where do I go? Gotta get away. Gotta get away. No. Where? Where should I go? No. Go on. Go. Gotta go. Where? Where? Gotta get away. Gotta get away. Gotta get away. No. No.
You gonna stop him, Preacher?
Not me, Dupree. It's a hard thing, and these pilgrims don't want to accept it. But that man will be better off this way. I seen the insides of one of them insane asylums one time back in St. Louis. Most pitiful goddamn thing I ever did see.
Winter'll probably kill him.
You never know. Folks like that got some sort of natural survival about them. That fool over yonder in the Bitterroot's still there. And he's as silly as a gaggle of geese. Been over there for going on 15 years, I reckon.
I clean forgot about that feller, but you sure are right. Wonder if he still lives in a tree.
He still was 3 years ago. Cause I seen him with my own eyes. He liked to have scared the crap out of me. I was riding along just a following the St. Joe and enjoying the view, when all of a sudden this fool comes a running and a hollering and a squalling out of the woods and waving a stone axe. My good horse damn near bucked me out the saddle. Pack horse tore loose and run off about a half mile, and I damn near made a mess of my britches. That crazy man was naked as the day he was born, and his hair was grown down to his waist. Terrible looking sight. Don't speak words that make no sense to nobody. Injuns is scared to death of him. I talked to Markhead last year, and he told me seen old crazy clear down at the Red Rock one time. Old crazy do get around.
Oh, help! Winston's gone! He slipped his ropes and fled! See to your women and children! The madman is among us!
Oh, shit! Somebody's sure to get shot if we don't sing out.
He's gone! He's gone! So y'all just calm down.
You saw him leave?
You sure do look funny in them long handles, Swift.
All right, now, damn it, did you see him leave?
Sure I did. I'd say it was good hour ago. He had enough sense to take a pack and a poke with him, so he ain't as crazy as you might think.
Why didn't you stop him?
Because we're better off without him, that's why. Now go away, let me sleep.
God damn it! Men, form a search party!
Some of them is gonna get lost, sure as we're laying here.
You wanna volunteer to lead them out there in the night?
Nope.
You shut up and go to sleep.
It didn't take long for the real show to start.
George Wilson is lost!
Oh, hell, I knew it!
Old Davis is alone and lost in the wilderness!
Oh,
Big bear tooth! Get up, Lobbud! The rescuers and the searchers done got themselves lost in the woods.
Well, why don't they just sit down on the ground and wait till morning?
Oh, they got to go blundering around in the timber in the dead of night looking for a fool who's probably 5 miles gone from here by now.
Oh, hush up and come on. Them folks will be sure enough lost if we don't go in there and take them by the hand and lead them out like lost children in the wilderness. I wish the hell they'd all stayed at home.
Caleb Potter is lost in the woods.
Now, goddammit, everybody just stay where the hell you is. Just sit down on the ground and wait for us to find you and fetch you back. Good God almighty.
It took the mountain men hours to round up all the movers and lead them back to the wagon train. Some of the men were badly shaken by the night's events. Even the men accustomed to the woods, getting lost in the deep timber at night can be a shattering experience. And Winston? Well, they saw his tracks come dawn. He had headed north, straight as piss. The train stayed put for another day until Nighthawk returned from a scout.
We're in for it, all right, Preacher. Looks like every renegade west of the Little Missouri is gathered up there in the Blues.
That many, Hawk?
I would say about 150 Indians. Many tribes represented, and probably 50 or more white, half-breed, or quarter-breed outlaws.
Lord have mercy. I've heard worse news, but I can't rightly recall where or when it was. Where in the hell did Bum come up with that many whites?
Well, Beartooth, lots of old boys come drifting out here over the past couple of years, wanting to be trappers and such. I reckon lots of them was wanted for some kind of crime back in the organized country. They soon found out that trapping these mountains was damn hard work. Easier to find their own kind and go on back to stealing.
You find attacks by renegade Indians amusing?
I find it plumb ignorant that you brung them out here to begin with. But you did, and they're here. So that's beside the point. Red Hand and Bum, they don't like me very much. Red Hand, well, he hates whites, all of them. He even hates Bum Kelly. But he'll work with them because one's just as sorry as the other. It'd be just swell for Red Hand if he could take my hair. He'd be a big man. Same for Hawk here and Beartooth and Dupree and Jim. This showdown's been coming for years.
And you're looking forward to it?
Well, you might say that. I ain't looking forward to getting my hair tooken. But when somebody just keeps prodding at me, I sort of get my hackles up and start thinking about ways to prod back. Now look, y'all better understand this now. They're gonna be hitting us all the way to the Blue Waters. And they're really gonna hit us in the Blues, probably on the Powder, too. They want your women folk, and they covet your possessions. I heard them trash I killed back a ways talking about seizing girls 10, 11, 12 years old and selling them to slavers. So you folks talk, and you make up your minds that there just might be a lot of killing from here on out. Get your stomach set for it. Break out your molds and lead, start making balls. Cause you're gonna need them.
They spent another day and night in camp, the movers melting lead and casting balls for their weapons. A new spirit seemed to overcome the movers, and the mountain men could sense it. The settlers had come far, and no band of wild renegade Indians and white trash was going to stop them, not this close to their final destination.
Beartooth, when the train pulls out, I want you and Dupree and Hawk to guide them through. I'll be doing a little preambulating about on my own. This is getting right personal to me now.
Sounds like you're going to be having fun while the rest of us is left behind.
That's right. I'm going to make life miserable for them trash north of us. I'm going to roar like a grizzly and howl like a wolf and snarl like a mad puma.
You talk about old Winston and crazy people. What do you call one man going up against 200 or better?
I call it taking the fight to them, preacher style.
Melody and Penelope, with Richard and Edmund in tow, stopped by the camp of the mountain men just as dusk was settling. It was obvious they wanted to talk to Preacher by the way they kept looking around and fidgeting like kids.
Preacher ain't here. He left out hours ago. He'll need us on the Powder.
Whatever in the world would make him do something that brash?
He go count coup, take plenty scalps, hang on horses' mane. Impress pretty girls.
I happen to know that you can speak perfect English, Nighthawk. I know that you can read and write and do sums. I hear you were raised and educated in a white home. Now will you stop grunting like a heathen and speak properly?
No, like talk this way. Talk like white man, make tongue tired.
Oh, for pity's sake, I give up.
Good.
Why has preacher gone away into hostile territory?
Hawk just told you, Edmund. Can't you hear good?
My good man, I will have you know that my auditory faculties are excellent, I assure you.
Your what?
My hearing.
Why didn't you just say so? Anyways, preacher is going to harass Boom and Red Hand's people.
Alone?
No, of course he ain't alone. He got his horse with him. Damn, woman. You didn't think he'd walk up yonder, does he?
I meant...
I know what you meant.
Don't you worry none about Preacher, missy. He's an old lone wolf. He's at his best operating by himself. He'll be all right.
He likes it, ma'am. Preacher's part grizzly, part wolf, part puma, and part rattlesnake. And he's mean when he's riled up. Lord have mercy, missy. He's mean. He ain't gonna cut them folks up yonder no slack when he goes on the warpath. He's the best they is, ma'am. I ain't never seen nobody that even come close to Preacher in the wilderness. You hear all sorts of talk about Carson and Bridger and Johnson and Brown and Simpson. And the talk is true for the most part. But them's explorers and guides and so-called adventurers and trappers and the like. Preacher's all of them things too, but what counts most is he's a warrior. After Preacher gets done with his slipping around up yonder and his throat cutting, there's gonna be some white and Indian alike that's gonna pull out. They ain't gonna want no more Preacher. You'll see, ma'am, all of you. Right about now, Preacher is getting ready to make war. When he starts, it's going to be right nasty.
Preacher lowered the Indian to the cool earth. The dead renegade had him a right nice war axe, so Preacher took that. Standing in the darkness, he hefted it. It had a dandy feel, good for throwing. He wiped his blade clean on the dead buck's shirt and slipped silently on, moving closer to the dancing flame of the small campfire that was placed close to a boulder. He could see another buck sitting close to the flames, roasting him a hunk of meat. Preacher started salivating. It was bare, just about ready for gnawing on. He worked his way closer and stood still, moving only his eyes. These two, the one lying dead in the timber and this one sitting by the fire, were supposed to be the forward lookouts. Just a couple of miles ahead would be the main party of outlaws and renegades. Preacher judged the distance carefully, cocking back his new war axe in a throwing posture. The head of the axe caught the buck lower than Preacher had intended, but it was a righteous throw. The head drove deep, severing the jugular. The body spasmed.
Oh, goddammit, quit kicking and die. You're gonna knock that meat into the fire.
As the engine expired, Preacher moved quickly, rushing up to the brave and placing his knife at the front of the buck's hairline. Slinging his second trophy in his sash, he grabbed up the meat and slipped back into the timber. He left Hammer picketed deep in the woods, with good graze and a bit of water so he wouldn't get restless. Preacher squatted down about a mile from the now still and bloody camp. As he ate, he smiled. The body would have been discovered by now, and the real fun would start. They'd be coming at him hard, with vengeance on their minds. He'd taken scalps, and to make matters worse, he killed them at night. That meant to their tribe that they'd wander forever the land, unable to attain the great beyond and rest in the land of plenty. Preacher now had two war axes, having taken one from the careless buck by the fire. He carefully shifted locations through the brush and timber, working his way north, staying at the edge of the timber and inside the Wallawas. Preacher froze. Ahead of him was a brave and a big one, much larger than the average Indian. He was making his way towards Preacher's location, and from the way he moved, Preacher felt he hadn't been spotted yet. The brave would have to get a lot closer than he was before Preacher dared make even the slightest motion. For at this distance, the renegade would disappear before Preacher could use knife or axe. He sure didn't want to risk a shot and have the whole damn bunch of them down on him. The renegade slowly turned his head, and in the faint moonlight filtering through the trees, he looked right at Preacher. Preacher lowered his gaze to the brave's chest. He knew that looking directly at a person can sometimes bring to life a sense that ordinarily lies dormant. Preacher remained as still as the tree he stood by. He willed himself to be part of the tree, to be as one with the earth. It worked for him almost every time. but not this one. The preacher stepped away from the tree and flung a war axe. The heavy head took the brave in the face, embedding in his skull.
Huh, pretty good axe.
The preacher stuffed the hair behind his sash. He worked the axe out of the Injun's skull and wiped the blood away on the dead man's leggings. Satisfied with his work, he moved warily but quickly away from the death scene, working his way toward where he believed the main body of hostiles to be camped. He had left his rifle with Hammer because he didn't want to be hampered by a long gun. He had his pistols, but this was a night for the knife and the axe. Preacher smelled wood smoke. He pinpointed the location, then turned to the west and moved toward the source. Preacher sank to the ground on his belly. Up ahead, he could see several campfires. He knew that there were too many men around it for him to take on. Preacher was a brave man, but he wasn't stupid. He backed away from that camp and slipped around it, changing direction. Reaching a clearing, he hesitated. Something wasn't right. Squinting into the dark, Preacher saw two men standing just inside the timber on the other side of the tiny meadow. They had to be white men, for an Injun would never have been so careless.
Oh, this is stupid. I can't understand what in the hell we're on guard for.
Hell, don't ask me, because I sure don't know. A mover sure ain't gonna try no attack. And Red Hand's done got the cayuses off of us. I think it's plumb ignorant being out here when we could be warming our blankets.
I left me a squaw on the Payette to join this bunch. I want some bangles to take back to her. I figure we'll have our way with them mover women and then kill them and go through their stuff.
Preacher slowly circled the meadow, standing right along the line of timber, working his way up to within a few yards of the so-called sentries.
I'll be right back.
Where are you going?
Got to spill me some yaller.
Preacher lowered the throat-cut body to the ground, then walked right up to the remaining sentry.
I wouldn't mind letting the lizard out either. It's your turn to stand here and keep your eyes open while I...
Preacher buried a war axe in the man's skull, simultaneously grabbing the man's shirt to prevent the body from smashing the ground. He retrieved the other body from the wood, dragging it over beside his companion. Preacher figured he'd pushed his luck just about as far as he cared to push it this night, and he headed back to Hammer.
God damn it! God damn you, Red Hand! I thought you told me you fixed it with the cayuses!
This is not cayuse work. I have the assurances of the warriors in this area that we are to be left alone.
Well, who else will be working this area?
Preacher. He's amongst us.
That ain't possible. He's good, but he ain't that good.
Preacher slipped out of the bushes and started toward his horse, circling wide of the timber where he'd left the dead Injuns. He reached Hammer and swung into the saddle. He would head south following an old game trail. Once he had put enough distance behind him, he could stop, make a cold camp for the rest of the night, and go to sleep smiling. There'd be damn little sleep in the camp of Bum and Red Hand for the remainder of the night, that was for sure. Preacher met the wagon train a few miles south of where the trail crossed the Powder. Two of Red Hand's warriors had made the mistake of trailing Preacher out of the Wallawas. He now had their scalps tied to Hammer's mane, in addition to the other scalps he'd taken.
I can see you had an interesting night of it, did you not, Preacher?
It got right boring there toward the last. I mean, there weren't no fun left to it fooling with greenhorns, so I pulled out. But I reckon I did leave them in some manner of disarray.
What are those things?
Scalps, Swift. Human hair. Top knot, mostly. When I make war, I like to leave the enemy a little sign that it ain't real nice to fool with Preacher.
Oh, God, that's disgusting.
Actually, Edmund, I read somewhere that the white man originated scalping, not the Indians. What say you about that, Preacher?
Yeah, some tribes scalp, others don't. Most do. I suspect scalping's been going on ever since the knife was invented. Swift, there's a right nice place to circle about 2 miles ahead. Circle them tight, because we're close to the action now. Keep everyone inside. And when folks gotta leave that circle, have armed men with them at all times.
I'll spread the word.
When the wagons had been circled and the women were busying themselves with preparing supper, the mountain men gathered at their own camp, as always, away from the main body of the movers, and they talked.
I think we'll have at least one full day of safe crossing. That'll put about half the wagons on each side of the powder.
Yeah, that's the way I see it, too. Then when the men is busy on the second day, Bum and Red will hit us and they'll come fogging, boys. There ain't gonna be no feeler attacks. They'll try to make the first one do it.
And there's a chance they could do it, too. We're gonna be spread pretty damn thin.
Everybody that can shoot is gonna have to be well-armed. We got weapons aplenty. So, Jim, you check each wagon for powder and shot. Dupree, you see that every boy of age, hell, and the girls, too, if they can handle a gun and their parents allow it, make sure they're all armed. Beartooth, you and Hawk check out the crossing at first light. I sure hope God looks down and smiles on fools, because we sure got a bunch gathered here, including us.
Red Hand and Bum were still livid over the dead that Preacher had left behind him. Some of Red Hand's renegades were very nervous about continuing with the planned fight that lay ahead of them, and they warned that Preacher's medicine was too good to be defeated. Bum was beginning to wonder if Red Hand was in it for the long haul. He sat with Jack staring at the fire, deciding whether the show could go on without Red Hand if he backed down.
Bum, that took a hell of a man to do what Preacher done the other night, and an even better man to slip away once it was done. Some of the boys is right edgy, I gotta say.
I think Preacher's even got Red Hand thinking about quitting, Jack. I don't think he will now his honor's at stake, but he's thinking nonetheless.
So is some of our people.
You?
Not me. I'm in this till it's over, one way or the other. Way I see it, Preacher and all them others has got to die. If they was to get through and tell what they know about us, Army'd be sure to send men in after us, and all that'd be waiting for us would be a rope. And that makes my neck hurt just thinking about it.
This time tomorrow, Jack, there'll be plenty of women and girls for us to be using. And a few of us will be having plenty of gold to spend back east. Me? I'm gonna take my share and retire from this business. I'm gonna change my name and buy me a little business of some sort back across the Muddy and settle down. Civilization is moving this way, and it's coming fast. 10 years from now, there'll be people all over this area.
Jack doubted that. In fact, he doubted everything that Bum had just said. The man was an outlaw, and that was all he would ever be. Something in his head was warning him to pack his kit, saddle up, and ride the hell out of there before it was too late. But he knew he wouldn't do it. He had to finish the wagon train and actually look down on Preacher's dead, bloated body, and the bodies of everybody with him. He had a good thing going, this leading wagon trains to ambush. And if anyone lived to talk about it, he'd be finished.
What you pondering so heavy, Jack?
Thinking about all them women on the train.
Ooh. We gonna have us a high old time for sure. I can't hardly wait.
Jack looked at his comrades, sitting and squatting and standing in small groups. They were filthy, clothing hanging in rags, stinking and unshaven and ignorant. They were working 10 times harder being on the Dodge side of the law than they would be holding down regular jobs. But it was too late now. Jack looked south. Tomorrow would tell the story. Tomorrow would either be feast or failure for all of them. Preacher stood beside Hammer just above the banks of the Powder.
Well, Swift, there's gonna be some mighty mad outlaws and Indians when they see what's happening over here.
Tell you the truth, Preacher, I think you're out of your mind. This is one of the craziest things I ever heard of.
Not so crazy. Not perfect either, but it's a good plan.
Why?
We'll make them come to us. We can have the river on two sides of us. We have access to water that way, and our main forces could be concentrated on the other two sides. We have ample supplies for an extended siege and plenty of shot and powder. We can start gathering tall grass for the animals and keep them on short rations for a few days. I think it's a fine plan.
They were at a curve in the river, much like an upside-down V, with the river wide on both sides and narrow at the tip where the trail crossed. Swift thought about Preacher's plan for a moment, then nodded his head.
I guess it's better than us losing a lot of people.
The wagons didn't circle, but rather formed up into a long rectangular box, like a fort, with the stock inside the box. Swift assigned young people to scoop up the mess the livestock would make. It was going to be close and odious, but all felt they could wait out the outlaws and Indians. Men went to work immediately, cutting down small trees and clearing them of branches. The logs would be used first as barricades from bullets and arrows, then, if need be, to use in the building of rafts to cross the river, although at this point, Preacher didn't think rafting would be necessary. Across the river, Red Hand glared at Bum, his eyes hot with anger.
It is far too early in the day to stop for nightfall. Why don't they begin crossing? Why do they stop and build fortifications?
I don't know.
Bum, in fact, knew perfectly goddamn well what the movers were doing. He had a sinking feeling in his guts that Preacher had won another round. The outlaws were slap out of supplies. Coffee, beans, sugar, salt, flour, hell, everything. They had planned on living on supplies taken from the wagon train. Now, they would go without.
We've got to attack, Bum. We got to attack now, man.
Jack's right, Bum. We let them movers get all set over there and we'll never pry them loose. We're out of grub, Bum. We ain't got nothing to eat. And as soon as the shooting starts, there won't even be a rabbit within 5 miles of this place.
Yeah, Preacher's counting on that. He's counting on us sending people out on a hunt. Because come tonight, him and them other old boys down yonder is going to slip out and circle around on all sides of us waiting for a hunter to go out for game. And that hunter ain't never going to come back. God damn it!
To attack now would be foolish. We would have to cross several hundred yards of open land, then for the river. They would pick us off like ducks. If we wait until night, many of the new warriors who have joined us will not take part. They will not fight at night. We too are out of food, but unlike your people, we are accustomed to that. So what do you say now, Bum Kelly?
I don't know. I don't know.
It was mid-morning on the second day camped by the river. No hostile action had been initiated by the other side, but all could see the thin tentacles of smoke from their campfires. Richard stood beside Preacher with Swift and several others as they looked toward the seemingly deserted timber across the river.
We're at a stalemate, Preacher.
How long could we last?
Oh, days. Last two or three wouldn't be easy to take because the stock will be squalling for feed, but it'd be a discomfort to them without doing them no real harm.
Won't those thugs across the river go hunting for food?
How about you take a look around you, Swift? You see Beartooth or Nighthawk or Trapper Jim or Dupree?
No. Where are they?
Preacher pointed to the other side of the river as a horse came slowly walking from the edge of the timber. A man was tied in the saddle. Swift drew his spyglass from his belt, peering across the water.
There's an arrow in his back, and he's been scalped.
Yeah, coming from that direction, I expect that's Beartooth's work. It's like I've been figuring. Them folks over yonder's getting hungry. They're slap out of supplies. I expect they was counting on feeding off the supplies carried in this here train. We done spoiled their plans and turned everything topsy-turvy. Now they're sending out hunters. Them old friends of mine are sending them hunters back without their hair. God damn, I do love it when the plan works out.
Will they attack, do you think?
Well, they might. We might send a hard one in the hopes that they can take us on the first run. But more than likely, it'll just be a short attack to let us know they ain't forgot us and that they'll be waiting further on up the trail. If they had any sense, they'd just go on and leave us be.
Preacher looked out across the river. If he thought either one of the leaders would honor a flag of truce, he'd borrow a petticoat and wave it at him and palaver with him. But Bum had about as much honor as a stump. Red Hand was even worse when it came to dealing with whites. Now, at least Red Hand could always drift back into the wilderness, but Bum's situation was a different one. He had to keep trying until he succeeded in stopping the wagon train cold and killing everybody in it. If the outlaw leader had had any foresight about him, he'd have had hunters out killing game and smoking and jerking the meat. But if don't put a scrap of food in nobody's mouth.
Crossing the river, left and right.
Preacher came fully awake and out of his blankets. He looked up at the sky. It was cloudy with no moon. Good night for a fight.
All right. Everybody get up and ready. Buckets filled for flames and arrows. The women can handle that. Have the men stand ready for a fight. Assign the younger kids to load weapons. Now move!
Preacher took his position by a wheel and stared into the darkness. He found him a target, although a long way off, and pulled the hawk into his shoulder. A mover took aim at a second figure moving alongside the first. The target had frozen as his companion went down. Another engine got close. Swift drilled him right through the brisket.
Damn red savages!
Suddenly, Preacher spotted a hat that he remembered seeing miles back, long before he'd reached Fort Hall. He lifted his Hawken, sighting just under the brim.
Oh, shit! Adam's down and dead! My God, the whole back of his head is blown off!
Forward! Charge, man! Charge!
Across the river, Bull sensed that something was wrong. He turned to see the sky behind him lit in eerie orange. It only took a second before he realized what he was seeing.
Shit! Our camp! Oh, somebody's burning our camp down!
Bull was right. Beartooth, Nighthawk, Jim, and Dupree had slipped in as soon as the outlaws had slipped out and set fire to the camp and all their possessions.
God damn you, Preacher!
You wanna fight me, bum? How about it, you yellow-bellied son of a bitch? Just you and me! Winner take all!
A half a dozen men from Bum's Bunch and Red Hands began falling back to their burning camps to salvage what they could and see what had become of the guards, both white and red. All pretty well suspected they would find them dead. Bum dropped back to the edge of the river, ducking behind a large rock. He wasn't sure how to respond to Preacher's challenge, but he knew he'd better choose his words carefully. To an Injun, even a renegade, a challenge was something not to be taken lightly. If he screwed this up, Red Hand would take his men and leave.
I don't trust you, Preacher! Besides, I ain't got nothing to gain from whooping your ass!
True, there is that to be considered.
The hell you don't! You kill me, bum! You got one less mountain man on this train!
And there is that to be considered as well.
Bum did not like the wheels that were turning in Red Hand's head.
You guarantee me when I kill you that your buddies will pull off from the train?
Now, I can't speak for them, Bum, just for me. I'll tell you what, I'll make it a real sporting event. I'll fight two of you at once. You and that sorry damn Jack Harris. Now, can't see how you can refuse me that.
Nor can I.
Red Hand peered at Kelly, sizing him up with his eyes. A Kiowa ran up, dropping to the ground beside the engine renegade leader.
If they do not fight him, I do not wish to ride with them any longer, Red Hand. It is not good to be associated with cowards. Besides, I have thought that for some time that there is a secret that Kelly is keeping from us.
What could that be?
I don't know, but he lies.
He has always lied. What is so different about this time?
The value of what is in the wagons.
Red Hand grew thoughtful. The Kiowa was right. Bum had turned evasive each time Red Hand had tried to question him about the wagon train.
We will see what happens this night.
While Red Hand and the Kiowa were hobnobbing, Jack Harris had slunk up beside Bum.
It's some sort of trick, Bum. Don't you be believing nothing that damn Preacher has to say.
God damn it, I know that.
If we don't fight him, Red Hand and his bunch might pull away.
Come on, Bum! Jack! Are the both of you so damn yellow you got petticoats on under your britches?
Bum saw Red Hand and the Kiowa exchange an amused grin.
It's just a trick, Red Hand. It's nothing but a damn trick. Don't you fall for it.
Listen to him, Red Hand. He is a coward. I am taking my followers and leaving. Now.
No, wait. There is something in that wagon train that is of great value. The white man's money, perhaps. If that is the case, we could use it to buy more guns and powder and shot. Consider this.
Kelly is afraid of this man called Preacher.
Perhaps that is true. But Preacher is a man that any warrior would respect. Perhaps we are confusing respect with fear.
Red Hand knew he was telling a blatant lie. Bum Kelly was so afraid of Preacher he was probably pissing in his pants. But he wanted the Kiowa and his band to stay with the group.
Stay with us. When the time is right, we shall attack the wagons, seize the money, and then kill Bum and his people.
Good plan. We shall stay, but only if you give Bum to me to kill.
Done.
Red Hand smiled into the night.
Preacher! It is Red Hand!
What do you want, you damn renegade?
Your ugliness is exceeded only by your ability to lie. We do not blame Bum for not taking your offer. Since you are not to be trusted, We can only believe that your offer is a trick. You're trying to split our forces, and it will not work. Go to hell, Preacher!
You best break away from Kelly, Red Hand! You stay with that Buzzard Puke, and he'll get you killed! You best think about that!
Buzzard Puke! You'll eat them words, Preacher! You mock my words!
God damn it, let's just clear out. This night's gone all to hell.
On the other side of the river, Preacher allowed himself a satisfied grin.
It's over now, Swift. You see him slipping away? Ain't no use in even shooting. They're falling out of range.
So we've bought some time, is that it?
That's about it. But we didn't lose nobody tonight. And we can start crossing the river in the morning knowing we won't be attacked.
I guess we should count our blessings for the small things.
You know, Swift, the way I look at it, staying alive ain't no small thing.
The next morning, the four other mountain men returned to camp with big, shit-eating grins on their faces. Dupree looked brightest of all as he fell into a crouch beside Preacher and Richard at the fire.
They pulled out last night and headed north. Didn't even look back.
They're gonna be raggedy as bunch, because we sure made a mess out of their camps.
Their clothes needed burning anyway, filled with many fleas.
We left six more dead at the camps, and there's several more bodies floating in the river.
So our adversaries, while still quite formidable, have been drastically reduced in numbers.
Hey, Dupree, what the hell did he just say?
He say take heap many scalps, count plenty cool.
By the next day, all the wagons were across the Powder. Preacher had sent Nighthawk ahead to scout as they continued the rocky ride into the hills, heading in the direction of the Columbia. 5 days later, Beartooth rode up to Preacher at the head of the column.
It's getting downright boring, Preacher.
Yeah, I hope it stays that way.
Tell the truth, so does I. Nighthawk ought to be back today or tomorrow. Be right interesting to find out where Bum and Red Hand is planning on springing their next surprise.
I expect they crossed the Columbia and is waiting for us up to the north. Today's in for a long wait, because we ain't crossing the Columbia and heading north.
Now what you got rambling around in that noggin of yours, Preacher? We gotta cross the Columbia, man.
No, we don't, and we ain't gonna. We're gonna raft these pilgrims across the fall and stay to the south side of the river.
You've lost your mind, man. You can't take these damn wagons that away.
I know a way, Beartooth. I spent 2 years out here, remember? I got a way all figured out in my mind. It's gonna be rough, but we can do it.
I see you two palavering, and I know something's cooking.
Dupree, this fella here says he's gonna float us through the fall.
I know the way you're talking about, Preach. You're gonna be crossing the sandy 4 times. You best think about that.
Oh, the sandy ain't nothing. Bum and Red Hand's got scouts watching the crossing. You can bet on that. They got people looking and waiting all over the north side of the river. So we'll stay to the south. By the time they figure out what's happened, we'll be so close to the fort, they won't be able to attack.
Have you told Sweep?
No. Hell, don't none of these movers know nothing about this country. When you're lost as a goose, you ain't got no choice in the matter. You've got to follow the lead.
But you said yourself there's going to be scouts of Bums and Red Hands watching the fall.
Well, sure there are. But we ain't crossing there. We're gonna cross further south.
There ain't no damn place further south.
Yes, there is, Claw. You're a damn fool, Preacher. You planning on taking these greenhorns through pure virgin country? It ain't never been done before.
Well, that's what makes it so interesting.
Do you realize that we're gonna have to build a damn road? What you're talking about ain't nothing but a game trail.
Yep.
These wagons ain't never gonna stand the trip, Preacher.
They'll stand it.
You're a goddamn idiot.
Is that right? Well, do you want to quit?
I didn't say nothing about quitting. Did you hear me say anything about quitting, Dupree?
I didn't hear nothing about you quitting, Bearclaw.
Fine, I'm glad all that's settled. Now you can quit your bitching. You know the way we're going, so put your thinking cap on and close your mouth. Start thinking of ways to make it easier.
There ain't no easy way.
Well, then we'll do it the hard way. And we'll be the first to do it.
They crossed the Blues at its narrowest point and headed northwest, camping at a spot that in the years to come would be called Emigrant Springs. Only a few miles north of the springs, Preacher turned the long line westward and headed for the Umatilla River. It began to turn cold, but the movers thought they'd seen winds on the empty prairies east of the mountains. This changed their minds. Anything that was not secured properly, right and tight, Preacher called it, was blown off and scattered all to hell and gone. few days out from Umatilla, first birth was recorded on the trail. It was a hard and long birthing, and a wagon train was no place for privacy. A horrible experience racked the nerves of everyone among them. The mother had never been very strong, and shortly after the birthing, the woman died. The husband refused to accept the baby, a little girl, blaming the child for the mother's death. She was given to the Ellsworth woman to care for, and a hasty burial for the woman was arranged. Afterwards, the husband flatly refused to go any further. No amount of coaxing would change his mind.
Shit. Raining too damn hard to move anyways. We'll just stay here and wait it out. Maybe that feller will get over his grief come a new dawn.
The next dawn was still cold and rainy, and Preacher was startled from his sleep by a lone sound.
Oh, God damn it, Dupree. I bet I know what that was.
Yeah, I sure wouldn't bet against him.
Preacher and Dupree climbed from their blankets, heading directly to the fresh grave. The others in the train joined them. The young widower stuck the barrel of a pistol in his mouth and pulled the trigger, blowing out the back of his head. His body lay sprawled across the mound.
Get some shovels. It'll be easier digging up this fresh grave and just laying him beside his wife. I figured that's the way he'd want it.
That's a sacrilege, sir.
Shut the hell up, Edmund. Any man who'd shoot himself over a damn woman is a fool. Anybody who'd shoot themselves over just about anything's a damn fool. Life is for the living, because when you're dead, did a long time.
Preacher walked away from the group.
I have never known a man that hard.
It's hard country, Bible Shouter. This country feeds on weakness. I expect a day will come when this trail is lined with graves from beginning to end. 3 months after they're planted, there won't be no trace of them. Best get used to it.
The wagon train moved on, leaving behind him a lonely grave and the box of a wagon. The young couple's meager possessions were given to those most in need, the wheels taken for spares, and the canvas given to a family who had lost theirs in the high winds. They averaged about 8 miles a day, the men having to literally hack a road out of the narrow trail, using axes and pure sweat and muscle. Not one hostile engine was seen. Nighthawk reported that Bum and Red Hand had spread their people out north of the Columbia, in the wilderness along the Klickitat River. And as Preacher had predicted, when the train did meet up with some cayuses, they were friendly. Preacher bartered for enough fresh salmon to give everyone on the train a good meal, and learned that only a few of the tribe had taken to the warpath. Those that had were operating for the most part north of the Columbia. But the cayuses shook their heads and made the sign of a crazy person when they learned that Preacher was going to take the wagons across the mountains south of the river. Preacher talked long with the sub-chief, and the man inspected the gee-gaws in the trade wagon driven by Jim. After 2 hours of palavering, the men solemnly shook hands.
I told you the cayuses were friendly, Swift. They're going to help us cross the Deschutes. I gave the sub-chief everything in the wagon and the wagon itself. That'll be one less we gotta pull across the mountains, and it'll give us an extra team.
But that river is miles and days away. How do you know these savages will be there?
'Cause they gave their word to me, and we ain't never lied to one another, that's why. Move out, Swift. The promised land is that-a-way.
The crossing of the Deschutes was made, but it was not done without loss. Several head of livestock were drowned in the river, and several wagons were lost when the ropes on a raft parted and the raft came apart. Since possessions were rafted across separately, the movers' goods were dispersed among other wagons and the pioneers could ride the mules. Preacher bartered with the cayuses for saddles. He didn't ask where they got them, although he had a pretty good idea. The excruciating work took one full day, and they broke camp on the other side, ready for a rest. On the morning the train was to pull out, Swift approached Preacher with the surest look of confidence he'd worn since the haul began way back at Fort Hall.
You gotta get over the mountains before the snow flies, and she can fly early out here. This ain't gonna be easy. I'm warning you of that right now. But I said I'd get you through, and I'm gonna do just that. So toot on that damn bugle of yours, Swift, and let's tackle the last leg.
Tell you the truth, Preacher. I'm getting just about as sick of that damn bugle as you are.
We're gonna have about 1.5 days of fairly easy travel. Then you got to lighten wagons, and I mean discard everything that ain't absolutely necessary. The folks ain't gonna like it, I know that, but it has to be. You think going through the South Pass of the Rockies was bad? What do you see good and what's all around it?
I'll tell them, Preacher.
Now don't just tell them. Stand right there until they do it. We're fixing to go straight up and then straight down some damn mountains. Half the time right into a bog. We'll be doing it over and over and over again. Most beautifulest and the goddamnedest, god-awfulest country you will ever see. So start shaking down the movers, Swift.
I'll get it done.
On the second day after crossing the river, the train came to a series of hills, long, steep hills. The movers began throwing possessions away in earnest. There was a lot of fussing over how many things were being dumped by the trail, but in the end, the wagons were lightened considerably. On the first day after entering the Cascades, the wagon train hit a dense forest of pine, fir, and redwood, and they only traveled 3 miles. Many of the redwoods soared several hundred feet into the air. The trail they hacked out of the wilderness was a narrow one, just wide enough for a single wagon. Fallen trees had to be dragged out of the way. Huge rocks and jutting roots had to be first hacked at and then dug out. The only graze for the livestock was swamp grass. Preacher warned them that only a few miles further they would encounter laurel, and if the livestock ate it, they'd die. Lowering wagons down mountainsides by snubbing ropes to trees became commonplace for these pioneers, and they were all working harder than they had ever done in their lives. They no longer asked themselves if it was worth it. They were afraid of what their answer might be. Preacher strode up and down the lines, ensuring that each man was doing his job and doing it hard. All work, except for one.
Avery!
Preacher spotted the boy crouched almost out of sight in the rear of his family wagon, even as it was being pulled along by half a dozen other men. Avery had been too much trouble throughout the whole trip, but at the sight of others literally carrying his weight, Preacher lost it.
Come here, you little bastard!
Hey, get away from me! Ha! Ha!
Preacher tore Avery from the back of the wagon.
What the hell is going on here?
He hits me again, Pa!
I've had enough of this, Preacher. I'm gonna hand you a whooping you'll never forget. You hear me?
I'm looking forward to it. I had a belly full of you and I had a belly full of your son. You bring it when you're ready. I'll be waiting.
The men of the wagon train lugged their way uphill more than half a mile high, and then half a mile down the other side. That took a full day of brutally hard work, both for humans and animals. Most went to their blankets without even eating the evening meal. Even the rugged mountain men had had their fill of work for the day.
By now, I reckon Red Hand and Bum will know that we didn't come across the Columbia, and they'll be hard to follow on the trail we're blazing.
Well, it won't do them no good. You know where we are, don't you, Bear?
Tell the truth, I ain't rightly sure.
5 more days, we'll hit the valley.
By the Lord, we've done the impossible, Preacher.
Yeah, looks that way, old hoss.
You gonna tell the movers?
No. I do that, and they'll get all anxious and in a hurry, and somebody will get hurt in haste. We made better time than I figured we would. I gotta hand it to these folks. They got grit.
I got me a hunch that when they cross the last ridge and stand looking down into the valley, they'll give up on any plans of going north across the Columbia and just settle right there. I know a little something about farming, and that's good land for it. Damn sure rain's enough. What you gonna do when we get these pilgrims to the Promised Land, Preacher?
Well, loaf for a couple of days, then head back east to the mountains. I got me a little task to do.
And what might that be, Preacher?
I got me a score to settle with a feller named Bum and an Injun named Red Hand. You boys can come along if you like.
Well, my goodness gracious. Thank you kindly for the invite. I'll allow as to how I might just do that. How about you boys?
Wouldn't miss it for the world.
Hell, I feel left out by not going alone. How about you, Nighthawk?
Many of the rogue Injuns that had joined Red Hand had now left him. It was obvious to all that Preacher had tricked them and taken the southern route across the Cascades. Even the most stupid among them knew that to attempt to follow would amount to nothing. By the time they recrossed the river and picked up the trail of the wagon train, the movers would be across the mountains and into the valley. To attack a wagon train that close to the fort would be downright foolhardy. Even many of Red Hand's own band had given up in disgust and headed back to more familiar ground. Bum's band of trash and outlaws had shrunk to about 25. On a cool, early autumn morning, Bum watched as Red Hand and his people saddled up and broke camp. He walked over to the renegade.
You giving up?
There will be another time. To pursue now would be pointless. We ride back east. We'll cross the river just north of where the snake flows.
Come!
Bum walked back to his men. Leo tossed a stick into the fire.
No women, no gold, no nothing.
It ain't over yet.
What you grinning about?
Well, Bull, I'll just tell you. You come to me whilst I was talking with Red Hand. Seedy, didn't you tell me you'd been to Fort Vancouver recent?
Only about 6 months ago.
And the brand new building for the missionaries' church was not in the fort?
Oh, no. It's a good 3-4 miles from there. But they built it on purpose there so the engines would feel better about coming into it.
Busting our butts for nothing. That's what we've been doing.
What you mean, Bum?
Them folks in the wagon train don't know us. How could they? They ain't never seen us. Don't nobody at the fort know us. It stands to reason that them women missionaries and the gold is gonna be at the church. Seedy said the living quarters was in the rear of the building. It's 3-4 miles from the fort. All alone, ain't it, Seedy?
You bet.
Preacher and them sorry friends of his is sure to be hellfiring back toward us to finish this fight. All we gotta do is be a little careful and just head straight west from here and then cut south. You boys see what I'm getting at?
Kinda, but ain't that sort of risky? If we're thinking along the same lines, that is.
Not really, Jack. We can go in and grab the gold and the women and be gone hours before anybody discovers the bodies. Far as that goes, we can kill some damn Injuns and chunk their bodies in there and burn the place down. Who'd know the difference?
I like that. We could grab us a couple of young squaws, hump them till we're ready to go, and then kill them.
Good idea. There's lots of fall berries now, and the squaws will be out picking them to make pemmican. Should be easy to grab a couple young ones. But we're gonna have to be real quiet about it. And when the deed is done, we're gonna have to move fast and far. We're gonna have to be careful about which tribe the squaws belong to.
Why?
Oh, think about it, Seedy. Which would you rather have on your trail? A peaceful Injun or a Blackfoot?
Oh, yeah. When do we ride?
Let's give Red Hand and his boys a couple of hours to get clear away. We can be breaking camp and packing up now, just in case that damn renegade left someone behind to snoop and spy on us.
Preacher rode slowly back to the wagon train. He hadn't told any of them that on that day, they would be done with the mountains and looking out over the huge valley that lay south of the Columbia. They had reached the promised land. Preacher was proud of this bunch of pilgrims. They had done what no one, to the best of his knowledge, had ever done. And he knew that all of them, with the exception of Wade and his two-bit kid Avery, would be bigger and better people for the trip. Preacher knew, too, that not all of them would survive out here. Injuns would get a few, fever would take a few more, accidents and other mishaps would claim still a few more. But those that would live could be proud of what they'd done. Preacher rode through the timber, which was so dense that a man couldn't possibly see more than 30 feet ahead through it. It was only about 100 more yards to go before they broke free and could stand on the plateau that overlooked the valley. He carefully tucked his smile away.
Hey, Beartooth.
Preacher. You gonna tell him?
No, not just yet. Well, maybe a few of them. Hey, Melody, come over here. I want to show you something. Richard, you and Edmund and Penelope come along too.
This is it? This is the same thing we've been seeing for weeks.
Y'all walk out there on that flat and take a good look. Go on. I'll wait here.
The four did as they were instructed.
Yee-haw!
Woo-hoo! My God, Preacher! Is it the Red Savages?
Nope. It's your home, Pilgrim.
A late afternoon, the pioneers, many of them ragged and gaunt, stood on the plateau and gazed in disbelief at the lush and green valley that lay before their eyes. Some had wept, and others dropped to their knees and prayed, giving thanks to God for getting them safely through the wilderness. Only a few of them had included the mountain men in those prayers at first. But then, as they realized they never would have made it without the help of Preacher and his friends, they formed a huge circle and linked hands, offering prayers for Preacher, Dupree, Nighthawk, Trapper Jim, and Beartooth. The mountain men stood back. None of them were praying men.
Well, goddamn, we ought to be fairly blessed, I reckon.
Goddamn good thing, too. I expect we're going to need all the help we can get when Gabriel sounds the call.
Swift decided at that moment that it was a good time to rally the movers and get them down from the plateau.
Ah, that does it! I'm gonna snatch that bugle away from him and stomp it so flat not even an angel could toot it!
Jim, ride yonder to the river. Get one of them engines that's always hanging around the canoe you crossed. Tell the chief factor we got a whole passel of pilgrims waiting on this side. You might as well spend the night and ride back in the morning.
See you boys, then. I'll be thinking about you when I belly up to the bar.
Don't you drink up all the whiskey now, you hear me?
Can't say it won't try.
Preacher, are we reasonably safe from Indian attack here?
No, you ain't. But you are safer here than at any other time behind you. Now, some of you are thinking about staying on this side of the river and farming. Best thing you can do is build your cabins close together for protection.
We are thinking that, Preacher. It's so beautiful.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all!
The pilgrim shook Dupree's hand before heading back to his family.
Good luck, Mouvel! I do reckon that we could take a few days' time to see that these pilgrims know how to notch logs and the like.
Yeah, that would be the plum Christian thing to do, all right.
I think you're all plum loco. Damn! Never fails out here. Wettest damn place I ever been in all my entire life. But sooner build me a cabin under a waterfall.
I long for the Rockies. Where do you figure on wintering, Preacher?
I ain't giving no thought to Pre. Damn sure ain't gonna be near here. I can tell you true on that.
Best thing for you, Preacher, is to wrap your robe around that blonde-haired filly and snuggle up close to her while the snow flies. She keep a man warm, I'm thinking.
Yeah, best thing for you to do, Bear, is shut that fly trap of yours.
Melody and Penelope and Richard and Edmund arranged for passage across the Columbia. The Preacher was out hunting when they left, deliberately gone. About half the wagon train elected to cross the river to settle on the north side, the remainder choosing to remain on the south side. Despite his grumblings and sourness, the mountain man really liked the pilgrims, and in a way, he felt responsible for them. It was a strange feeling for the normally solitary man. So the time went by quickly in the building of corrals and stables, stockades and the homes that would stand inside them. One day, Preacher looked up and found that he and the others had been in the valley almost 3 weeks.
A time to fly when our buddies are having fun, don't they, Preacher?
Yeah, well, I don't know about the fun part, Dupree, but...
Something's wrong, Preacher!
I gleaned that right off, Jim. What's going on?
Old John Billingley was at the fort provisioning up for the winter. He just come in from the east. Says Red Hand and his bunch was riding hard back to their own territory. But without Bum Kelly and them renegades. And there was two raggedy-looking hard cases just hanging around the fort. They pulled out quick when they spied me eyeballing them.
What else?
The church that your sweetie is living at is located a good 4 miles from the fort. Plumb isolated it is. Chief Factor told me that it was done deliberate so that the engines would come to it better.
And Richard told me they'd keep the gold at the church headquarters. Do they have any fighting men out at the church?
Nope. Couple of tame old Chinooks is all. They sweep and dust and the like. I warned the factor at the fort that there was a lot of money with the missionaries.
I don't like it, Preacher. I don't like it at all.
I know a shortcut from here. They must still be a day or two out. And if we can just get there a few hours before them, that'll be enough.
Then let's ride now.